hopefully we'll be able to complete the chapter this morning. Canto 3, chapter 12, starting with text 50. So this is the process of creation once again, where Brahma is doing the sub-creation, this sarga, and we're about to witness the appearance of Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, born directly from the body of Brahma, no assistance from his wife. It's significant in many ways. He has all these multifarious potencies. Srishti Shakti, that's one of his capacities. He's a guna avatar and a Shaktivesha avatar. He's a powerful person. So we heard yesterday that that the initial body that he had, which is made of Shabda Brahman, he gave it up so that he could do his, for one of the reasons, a purpose of his being attracted to Vak is now taken care of. He has a different body at the dawn of creation so that he can engage himself in the matter of further creation. O son of the Kurus, so the speaker is Maitreya. Maitreya speaking to Vidura, who's in the line of the Kuru dynasty. When Brahma saw that, in spite of the presence of sages of great potency, there was no sufficient increase in population. They don't have wives. He seriously began to consider how the population could be increased. Brahma thought to himself, "Alas, it is wonderful that in spite of my being scattered all over, there is still insufficient population throughout the universe. There is no other cause for this misfortune but destiny." I'll just comment on that quickly. Our book distributors reported to me that particularly when they meet Western people, non-Indian people, a common question these days has been, "Do you have any books on meditation?" So, a series of presentations were made to reach out to that community of people that we're not reaching so well, on an area of interest of theirs, and that is meditation. So, several series, they're working on number four-part modules on the art of meditation with different headings. So one of those headings is Art of Meditation, Overcoming Negative Emotions. Now, this is for non-devotees. For the devotees, the Krishna conscious process is very simple. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma. Na sochati, na kangsati, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, mad bhaktim labhate param. Then you can become a devotee. So, for us, you know, the primary instruction, the shelter in Krishna instruction is at least a hum brahmasmi. And as long as you don't have a hum brahmasmi, you're not going to have prasanatma. You're going to have sochati and kangsati. You're going to have hankering and lamenting, and you're going to have negative emotions. Everybody knows about negative emotions. Who doesn't know any about negative emotions? And the happy ones too, the positive ones. That's the territory in this realm of duality. There's this and there's that. So for the devotees, that's the pinnacle. And in case we're not in the Brahman realized in prasanatma stage, and there is still some hankering and lamenting, and we're not seeing all living entities equally, well, we're in the sadhana stages of bhakti. We're still doing bhakti, but it's sadhana bhakti. And so we need to reach that goal. That's the goal doesn't change. But overcoming negative emotions, this is for our Western audience. They don't know about they're not so much necessarily ready for the Brahma-Bhuta stage. They're ready for overcoming their negative emotion stage. And meditation is big. So one of the lessons from the people that aren't Brahma-Bhuta, Brahman-realized people, like, you know, psychiatrists and counselors and people that help people manage their negative emotions, is this principle of acceptance. And, you know, for a devotee also, accept. This is my situation, or this is my destiny. Not like you don't have any free will choices left, but you're just walking down the path of life and surprise, here comes something unexpected. Here comes some misfortune. And it can be, it's the reflex, the animal instinct, that you just try to manage the situation so you don't have such a negative emotion. And you get really caught up in the negative emotion management and just further forget who you are. It's a trick of Maya. And it works. So, one of the principles is right here. Brahma's accepting. It's destined to be although I've done all these things, still there isn't, the purpose of the creation isn't being fulfilled yet. What do you build something for so people can inhabit that something or use that something? So it was part of Krishna's plan. So he doesn't like, okay, I guess I'll just go find the nearest hammock and sip lemonade and be happy. He does something. He makes uses his intelligence, guided by Super Soul. This is what we should do, and take some appropriate action given the circumstance. But we can choose our free will, even in the face of destiny. Important. We can choose how to respond to good fortune, ill fortune. If you feel disempowered to choose how to respond, and not just respond by managing the situation so that if it's something that's outside of your control, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's cold and rainy in Detroit. What are you going to do? Carry an umbrella and wear a winter coat. Anyway, you can do something, but it's not, that doesn't bring happiness, just managing the situation, carrying an umbrella, get a nice, engineer makes a design for umbrella that's really good one, fits your needs, so now you're happy. That's not progress of human civilization. The progress of human civilization is to know who you are. And to know who you are, the medium of that is, I'm the spirit soul meant for service to Krishna. It doesn't stop at, I'm not this body. And I'm spirit soul. Okay. And then what do spirit souls do? If it's just negation, you don't know. And even the negation part is negation only. It's the mind saying no. But what's the positive shelter? Aruya Krishchena. So you can't stay there. The meditators that I've spoken to, how do I stay there? That's, you know, there's this, they don't know how to describe it, place of higher consciousness. Yeah, that's it. How do you stay there? We have to have shelter. And, well, what's the shelter? Krishna. Oh. But, you know, some people don't make that noise. Really? How do I know about Krishna? Here's Bhagavad Gita and so forth. So, Brahma is managing his emotion. He's, you know, not feeling a happy emotion that he went to all this trouble to build the universe and there's nothing to fill it up. It's insufficient, not nothing. So, while he was thus absorbed in contemplation and was observing the supernatural power, Daivam is the Sanskrit, Tasya Daivam, his supernatural power, two other forms are generated from his body. They are still celebrated as the body of Brahma. This is Swayambhuva and Shatarupa. Purport. Two bodies came out from the body of Brahma. One had a mustache, and the other had swollen breasts. No one can explain the source of their manifestation, and therefore, until today, they are known as Kayam, or the body of Brahma, with no indication of their relationship as his son or daughter. It's right in the Sanskrit, Kayam, his body. In the Acharya's, in Vishwanath's commentary, he breaks down the two parts, Kayam. It's, in one sense, they are also Aja, as Brahma is Aja, that is, not born from mother and father in the normal way. So one could reasonably say they're also Aja. But they, because they're born from the body of Brahma and not from Vishnu, there's this other nomenclature, Kayam. Kayam. His body. Text 53. The two newly separated bodies united together in a sexual relationship. So implicit is they appeared not as little babies and then went through some transformations to become adults. You're born with a mustache. And right away, you know, facilitating the desire of Brahma. Out of them, the one who had the male form became known as the Manu, named Swayambhuva. And the woman became known as Shatarupa, the great soul, the queen of the great soul, Manu. Thereafter, by sex indulgence, they gradually increase generations of population, one after another. Not a big abundance. Here's, O son of Bharata, in due course of time, he, Manu, begot in Shatrupa 5 children, 2 sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapada, and 3 daughters, Akuti, Devahuti and Prasuti. And the last verse of the chapter. The father, Manu, handed over his first daughter, Akuti, to the sage Ruchi, the middle daughter, Devahuti, to the sage Kardama, and the youngest, from Suti to Daksha. From them, all the world filled with population. Like, they were Prajapatis. So these, the three personalities mentioned, Ruchi, Kardama, and Daksha, they were sons produced before Swayambhuva Manu, 10 sages, including Narada. And they're born from different parts of the body of Brahma that's mentioned earlier in this chapter. So, then his son, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatrupa, produced daughters. The three daughters were given as wives for three of the sages. And then daughters were produced by Kardama and Devahuti, 9, they were given to other sages for the purpose of Brahma's function, filling up the universe with good praja. And then there's details and details. Included in all of this is, in Mahabharata, details and details of, you know, different species of life. It's quite a different picture than Darwin's picture. And people that read the Vedas go, oh, mythology. And they prefer another one, mythology, going under different names. The singularity exploded, or Big Chunk exploded, or Big Bang, and with nobody setting off the Big Bang. It just banged. Chance. So, purport. The history of the creation of the population of the universe is given herewith. Brahma is the original living creature in the universe, from whom were generated the Manu Swayambhuva and his wife Shatrupa. From Manu, 2 sons and 3 daughters were born, and from them all the population in different planets has sprung up until now. Therefore, Brahma is known as the grandfather of everyone. And the personality of Godhead, being the father of Brahma, is known as the great grandfather of all living entities. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 11:39 as follows. Vayur yamo ni varuna shashanka prajapatis tvam prapita mahascha namo namaste stu sahasra kritva punascha bhuyopi namo namaste. You are the Lord of Air, the Supreme Justice Yama, the Fire, and the Lord of Rains. You are the Moon, and you are the Great Grandfather. Therefore, I offer respectful obeisances unto you again and again. So this is Arjuna, after seeing the universal form. So you're the source of everything. You are everything, that the non-difference feature, and you're the source of everything, the difference feature. But that's for experienced devotees, that's easy, and for non-devotees, it's inconceivable. Or it's double talk. But the Vedas are filled with double talk. He walks, he does not walk. He's very near, he's very far away, he's within everything and outside of everything. Because it's not only the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva concept, but that's a foundation or teaching, vada, doctrine. But there's different aspects of the source of everything. his Bhagavan feature and his Paramatma feature and his Brahman feature, for example. Or his various energies, Prasya Shakti Vibhadaiva Shruyate, for example. And those energies aren't different than the energetic, although the energies are different than the energetic. There's a oneness and difference simultaneously from everything, from the source of everything. It's a very reasonable teaching. And one can look at the oneness, and one can look at the difference, and there are verses in the Bhagavatam that speak both. And there are sections of the Bhagavatam that impersonalists... Shankaracharya didn't comment, but he appreciated the Bhagavatam. There are some prayers that are specifically composed by Shankaracharya, specifically making references to passages that are only in the Bhagavatam. There are some pastimes that are only in the Bhagavatam, or specific aspects of pastimes that are only in the Bhagavatam, which means he was familiar with the Bhagavatam, but he didn't comment on it. So some of his followers wanted to comment on it. This is some detail. According to Jiva Goswami, Sridhar Swami knew that some of his followers wanted to make a commentary, and that he thought they would butcher it. And so he made a commentary. He had a strategy. He would make a commentary that they wouldn't trash, because it wouldn't be so Vaishnava-like that they would just like, oh, humbug. So there are portions of Sridhar Swami's commentary that sound like, look like, quack like a duck. Look like, you know, so he would encourage them to read his commentary, but the predominance of his commentary is very clearly Vaishnava. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted his commentary. He was, you know, precursor to Lord Chaitanya. Balabha, you know, took exception to some portions of his commentary and made a better commentary. Lord Chaitanya didn't like that. So when Jiva Goswami, because Lord Chaitanya accepted Sridhar Swami's commentary, when Jiva Goswami composed the Sandarbhas, there's a section that persons who are composing, you know, a PhD thesis or some kind of a statement that's, you know, for scholarly people, one of the rules is towards the beginning, you declare to your reader or your audience how you plan to proceed, what's the methodology, and what are the principal resources that you're going to incorporate in your paper or your presentation. So one of the things he does is he says, this is the method I'm going to use, and the resources are primarily Srimad Bhagavatam. And that portion of Sridhar Swami's commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam that is consistent with Vaishnava conclusions. I mean, he didn't get into it that the commentators on Tattva Sandarbha say, this is why he did what he did. He's a follower of Lord Chaitanya. He's the principal. So his commentary is very important. But he didn't include, and explicitly says, those portions which are consistent with Vaishnava teachings. And then he gives some other, you know, primary Sri Vaishnava commentators on the Bhagavatam. But so the Bhagavatam is the main reference, and then there's some others. He relied very heavily on Madhvacharya's writings. There's another little detail. During the time of Madhvacharya, there were books present that during the time of Jiva Goswami, they weren't present. So he says, these references are references that I have personally seen with my own eyes, or they exist from known authoritative sources. and primarily it's Madhvacharya. Because Madhvacharya was, you know, he went all over India twice and gathered literatures and had a big library, and the library got damaged. So he had physical references. You know, there was no printing presses. You didn't go to a bookstore and see what you got here. He had to go to, because of his qualification as an acharya, he had access to the learned persons in different places. And when he found literature that he didn't have, copies by hand were made and he brought them back. He had somebody carrying a truckload of copies that he kept in a library in Udupi. And there was a problem with the library. I forget the detail, and many of the literatures were lost. So those that I have directly seen, I will only quote those that I have directly seen or which come from authoritative sources. How'd I get over way over there? We're hearing a picture of creation from Maitreya. To Vidura being spoken by Sutta Goswami to Shonaka Rishi, which was previously spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. So we can trust the authoritative nature of what we're hearing. Can one verify this by the empiric process? No. And if you can't verify it by the empiric process, then how can you accept it? How do you know anything? And the empiric process is definitely not an adequate process to know anything. Even things that are perceivable, because the senses and our ability to read what our senses perceive is fallible. Even things you can't perceive, what to speak of things historically happened before you, or things that are of the transcendental nature, transcendental meaning beyond time and space, beyond creation, into the spiritual realm. You can't. It's pratyaksha and anuman don't work. But people don't want to give up anuman. They're attached to it, so they speculate. In just listening to a lecture, 1966, 26 Second Avenue, somebody in the audience asked, Prabhupada, how do you give up speculation? He said, by giving up speculation. By accepting the conclusion stated by Krishna. And you just, if you accept the conclusion stated by Krishna, business finished. If you don't accept the statements given by Krishna, you can go on speculating and never reach a conclusion, because it's inconclusive. It's the nature of speculation. So how to give up speculation is accepting. And so sometimes devotees are somewhere in between, accepting and still, you know, habitually speculating. That is an impediment. Conditioned tendencies are an impediment. Well, what can I do? Because I have this tendency. So we try to curb the tendency by connecting through sound vibration. That's our method, Shravanam Kirtanam. Like last night, there was this little discussion about the Ativadi group, Rupa Kaviraj. He dismissed one of the bogus things he taught, Shravanam Kirtanam, just go to Smaranam. Vaidhi Bhakti, forget it. just go to spontaneous devotional service. That's not Lord Chaitanya's teachings. It's not Rupa Goswami's representation of Lord Chaitanya's teachings on the science of bhakti. But he just created his own thing. And, you know, some people do that. Some people do that. You know, in case you meet somebody like that, it's good. You don't have to, like, put on your boxing gloves and punch him. But you should, you know, be very clear what the bhakti process is. And here's an example. There's this fellow, I forget his name, down, up, as you're going to our Krishna Balaram temple, maybe you've noticed on the left there's this humongous temple somewhere on the left-hand side as you're going in. And this is a fellow who just imitated Prabhupada. And one of his places is in Austin, Texas. I forget his name, it's not so important. But, you know, he created this international something or other. He just followed Prabhupada. And he has women sannyasinis, and, you know, he's like, you know, it's because everything is, it's Raghunuga Bhakti. You don't need any regulations. So one of the sannyasinis was giving a class, and one of our, you know, very simple devotees, he's, you know, uninitiated devotee from Guyana, Om Narayan is his name, at the end of questions, said, are we to understand from you that it's okay to eat meat, have illicit sex, take intoxication, and gamble? And that's okay. She got flustered. Because, you know, we don't have to follow anything, right? You know, he told me that he asked this. He went just to see, like, what's up and what they're teaching. And, you know, he's a gentle person. He didn't say it in a confrontational tone. But bottom line is that's what these people are saying. You can do anything. Being spontaneous. So Rupa Kaviraj, this is this Ati Vadi group, that's what they teach. And you have to be, but in order to be an acharya, you have to be a sannyasi. And now, what rules are there for sannyasis, I don't know. Maybe they don't have to do anything either. But Rupa Goswami's teaching is utpattaya eva kalpate. This is just a disturbance. So, going back to the earlier sections of this chapter, just previously covered, Brahma manifested everything necessary for the yet-to-be-populated universe to become elevated. Everything. The Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. So the purpose of everything within the Vedas is to know Krishna. And those that don't know the purpose of the Vedas, they may follow the Vedas, but wrongly, stated in Bhagavad Gita. Avidhi Purvakam. They don't know. So how do you know? You have to hear from disciplic succession. Otherwise you won't know. Otherwise you do a speculation thing. Even you take Bhagavad Gita and then, or any part of the Vedas, and it's a speculation thing. It's romper room for children. The speculators. So one of the, just referring again to our topic yesterday, one of the attributes that are as part of the glorification of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is he addressed the speculators. It was like, it was abundant. Because the disciplic succession process was abandoned, there were naturally intellectual people present, and they were all over the place, speculating. That was like, that was cool. That's what you do when you become intellectual, you speculate. So he took it on, rather than, as I mentioned, not just, you know, singing to the choir or preaching to the choir. He was reaching out to the speculators and quelling that tendency and helping them understand it's not going to get them to where they want to go, or it's not going to get them to the goal of life, and they need to take the bhakti process. Very powerful, very persuasive. And some people got it. Some people became envious, wanted to kill him. Towards the end of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, one British personality, his name I can't remember, he came to see Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Calcutta, and he came to apologize for his confession, of trying to, get rid of him, because I didn't understand your greatness. I don't want to leave this, I'm now an old man, I don't want to leave this world with that offense. And so, please forgive me. And Bhaktivinoda was a little surprised on the one hand, but not surprised on the other, because when you are confronting, even if you do it gently like he did, there's some opposition. And then different people manifest that opposition in different ways. And, big people have big skills in doing that. Intellectuals have their skills. And it's lethal. I heard Tamal Krishnaraj say this. He thought, being a GBC during his time, it was like, phew, it was really tough. And then when he went into academics, he said, this is like kids in a playground, in a sandbox, compared to academics. These people are really skilled, and they really go for the jugular vein. They know what they're doing, and they have the skills and tools to do it. They're really cruel. Oxford University. So, great personalities they're compassionate. Others may become, even they're careful, others may become offended and become envious of them, but Krishna will always protect them. That's their safety. They don't go walking across a highway in rush hour traffic, think Krishna's going to protect me. You don't take foolish steps. But when something is appropriate and you do it, you know that Krishna's protection will be there if you're a great acharya. So we'll end, see if there's discussion. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I find it interesting to see that Sri Brahma, he's supposed to be the secondary creator, but Swami doesn't have much control. Things happen like out of their own accord. He's not planning them, but he desires them, but then the things happen like
yes.
Krishna happening through Krishna or Vishnu.
Yeah.
He's just being an instrument. He's just being surprised, this happened.
Like Varaha's appearance. He was contemplating, and from his nostril came a boar. And it grew in size, and he's an instrument, and so are we. We don't know what Krishna's plan is, in many cases, but that's okay. Some people get in big anxiety. I know some people. I don't know what the plan is. I know some other people. They make a plan, or it doesn't happen. There's a big anxiety. Now, we have to have a plan. You have to live with a plan. But we also don't know necessarily. You have to be very flexible in creating the plan and seeing, is this what Krishna wants? And be very flexible to what Krishna wants. And how do you know what Krishna wants? Well, it depends on how clear your consciousness is. And if your consciousness isn't so clear, you can think you know what Krishna wants. Or you can know that you really don't know what Krishna wants and you get frozen. You have to proceed. But so what's the operative principle is Krishna's pleasure is everything. And read the scripture so you have some guidance and at least a notional one that in prior circumstances, here's how great souls behaved. And become familiar with our great acharyas in the line of disciplic succession. We can't imitate these personalities, but we can learn lessons from these personalities, become inspired by these personalities, and get, you know, some clue. And then we are our personality also. We have our gifts that are not the same as all these other great personality gifts. But it keeps one connected with the internal potency primarily, and some indication. And associate with persons who are gifted with serving Krishna nicely. Yeah.
That's a comment, and I have a couple of questions. One was, you
speak
mentioned...
Speak slowly, please.
Okay. That was a comment, and I have a couple of questions.
I heard that part, yeah.
First, you mentioned in the beginning that there are four modules on meditation you're working on.
Not me. Someone is preparing them, and I do the dance.
So, will there be four new books coming out from BBT?
No. No, this is just personal stuff.
Okay.
This is not a BBT anything.
Okay. Because you mentioned...
It's for new people.
Okay.
It's for new people.
Okay.
It's not a BBT anything.
Okay. The second question is, we hear in the sixth canto that the thousand sons of Brahma, they get converted to becoming a renunciate, even though they were born for the purpose of increasing progeny by a Brahma, and the Brahma curses Narada Muni. And then Brahma creates daughters so that they won't be...
It's Daksha.
Daksha.
That was
Daksha?
Okay.
Yeah, that's Daksha, sorry. No.
Okay.
I confused it. Anyway, I think it was Daksha who gave birth to daughters.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then that's how the creation started.
Yes.
Yeah. We hear even now early enough that there are already daughters here by Brahma.
Yeah, but they were a little older. They were already had husbands.
Okay. I just trying to understand the story, what happened there. So.
Okay. Yes.
The way you were speaking about Lord Brahma and his situation was reminding me of Yudhishthira Maharaj and his situation with the Pandavas, and that he was following virtue and taking shelter of Krishna simultaneously. So though, like his uncle Yudhishthira invited him to gamble with the cousins, he gambled knowing that, you know, there's these calamities coming. And then when they were in the forest, the other brothers were very disturbed by that situation, that it's his duty to be a ruler, as a king, but they're seeing him as not doing that. He's living in the forest with his brothers and Draupadi and associating with Brahmins. And they asked for a plan in some sense. And he gave them the plan. He said that we're in the forest for 13 years, as agreed. And then they said, if you follow the contingencies of this gambling match, then when you return in 13 years, you'll get your kingdom back. And he says, so be it. So his plan was 13 years of exile. So, because that was what he saw as Krishna's plan. So it's interesting that in that situation, and I think many of us encounter the situation in our Krishna consciousness, is that as we take shelter of Krishna, our lifestyle and our choices and our plans become a bit inconceivable to our own families and even other devotees. And it takes strength and faith to really take shelter of Krishna. As you were saying, this meditation on Krishna is our only really permanent shelter. When the day-to-day and the month-to-month and year-to-year there are many challenges in that, in the face of that. I was reflecting on that. And I think it's sweet that Krishna does it in this way.
You're making the connection with Brahma?
Yeah, because, well, Brahma's in this situation as well.
Which, how does the connection work?
There's no progeny. And so...
Well, Krishna's got a plan for that.
Right. So he's kind of going with it. But I was thinking in Lord Brahma's case, he's the sort of father of all living beings. So there's no one there questioning him per se. Whereas Yudhishthira is in a different situation. Everybody's questioning him.
Yeah. Our social situation is different. We're not Brahma. You know, a part of what you said, I want to question. I've never heard that Yudhishthira knew that gambling was going to have negative consequences, but he did it anyways. He's not omniscient. My understanding may be incomplete or even wrong. My understanding is, as a kshatriya, when there was some competition that was being requested, it's a kshatriya's spirit as well as a kshatriya's duty to accept the challenge for competition. Now, there may be some conditions that, well, if you know somebody's going to be a cheater, then you don't accept the competition. And Shakuni was known to be a rascal. Mm-hmm. Known to be a rascal. So, you know, a cheating competitor. You don't engage in competition with a cheating competitor. So, and then this, and then another, you know, the stakes of gambling his wife, which was something that Draupadi questioned to everybody in the assembly, and nobody could speak. How can you gamble your wife? And, you know, she's the wife of five, and how can he gamble, you know, the property of his other four brothers? So that's my understanding, is not necessarily he knew that there was going to be negative consequences, but he did it anyways. Yeah.
As I recall, like, both sort of arguments are there on his, that one is that it's his duty as a kshatriya to accept the challenge. And then, as I recall, I'm reading the Mahabharata, which is available on Vedabase. And as I recall, he also said, because then they requested in the gambling match again, and he's knowing that their cousins are cheaters, and so there's some malicious plans. And when he's speaking to Bhima, Bhima says, he challenges him, and whenever he says, I think it's out of humility that Yudhishthira says that I agreed because of the nature, I was absorbed in the moment and out of anger, or like, because Bhima's angry at Yudhishthira for staying in the forest
sure.
and not fighting. And then
sure.
Yudhishthira says, he says that about himself, that, oh, the gambling, I was absorbed, overwhelmed by the situation, and therefore did these things. But I think he's speaking out of humility, because
But that doesn't say that Yudhishthira knew there's going to be, like, all these horrific consequences, like 13 years of exile. So,
yeah.
I'm just editing a little bit. That's all.
So if I were... Could it be that, in spite of those calamities, he's not disturbed? So he's acting on virtue, and then when calamities come, he doesn't adjust his resolve.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. When same for us, we make decisions, and with every decision, there's an outcome. We accept the responsibility for our decisions because we made the decisions. And you may want to adjust the next decision. because you learn something from the first decision's outcome. Something that's never taken from any one of us is our free will, our opportunity to choose how to respond to the circumstances that our choices have presented to us. So the acceptance of the situation doesn't mean free will goes into the off position, or intelligence goes into the off position driven by our free will. We can make choices and adjust and regret we made these choices. Anyway, be careful making generalizations. That's all I'm saying. He had a certain character. Yudhisthira had a certain character. And he's like Yudhisthira, we have ours. And we can't deny it. He followed what, and Bhima followed his. He would, say things. And the elder brother situation trumped him. He was obedient to his elder brother. Even he, felt disturbed or so forth. Krishna, he wanted to smash Shishupal. Krishna just put up his hand. So he wanted to smash him.
You spoke initially about acceptance management.
Yes, yeah, yes, yes.
I was just thinking, when there is a circumstance and things are not going the way I want it to go or something like that, when is the time when you accept versus you're not trying hard?
The circumstance not going the way you want it to go, immediately accept the circumstance because of the circumstance. You don't abdicate your free will choice. Acceptance doesn't mean do nothing. Acceptance means don't get absorbed in the negative emotion about the circumstance. That's what acceptance means. And then you continue with your free will operating. What's the best, appropriate, pleasing Krishna response to this circumstance? I accept the circumstance. Because the negative emotion is that circumstance. No, you don't have to like the circumstance. Acceptance doesn't mean yummy. It means this is an arrangement. Now, what's Krishna's plan for me? What should I be doing to please Krishna given the circumstance? You may not have an answer, but you don't have to get caught in the negative emotion. Feeling imprisoned by the circumstance and imprisoned by your emotions more than even the circumstance. Your freedom is there. Acceptance is liberating, not disempowering. They want to be the controller. It's not going the way I want it to go. Ishwara aham aham bogi. So then you got your plan how to be the Ishwara. But we're not. You have something. Well, that's an option. That's a free will choice. Now, some searches are, here's a car coming, driving at you. You can't delay. Some situations you must. In some situations you can pause. And stay in that pause space, that mode of goodness space, and reflecting. you know, that's a choice too. Or you can, you know, if you practice this, if it becomes your way of living, a prompt from Super Soul giving intelligence, this is a good way to go. In service to pleasing Krishna, given the circumstance. Then you can go quickly. And you may continue in the pause space. And at some point, even you're pausing, the clock is ticking and you have to make some decision, turn left or right. So you turn left or you turn right. You're not really sure whether left is right or right is right. So then you're still open to the prompt from Krishna that says, you know, you turned wrong. Because the goal is to please Krishna.
So ultimately,
the service mood saves you. And you have to be practical, given the realities, you know, the apparent realities around you. Pull over to the side of the road and get out your GPS. Yes?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. You mentioned that Arjuna, upon seeing the universal form of Krishna, he says that, Krishna, you are the source of everything, and Krishna, you are everything. And you mentioned it's the Achintya Veda Tattva principle. So, most of the times, what I have heard in the lectures, I see that we are instructed to see everything in connection with Krishna, especially be it relationships or objects. So when I take relationships, I understand that, okay, this person is a part and parcel of Krishna, so I'm trying to see the connection between Krishna. And whereas when it comes to material objects also, I'm trying to establish or see the connection with Krishna. So my question is, Maharaj, how does the other principle that we talked about of seeing everything in Krishna, does it have any practical uses?
How, seeing everything in Krishna?
Seeing everything as Krishna.
As Krishna. Well, yeah, it's Krishna's. That's practical. It's his. No, we're in somebody's house. And it's his and his wife's house. It's, so we respect it accordingly.
Actually, my question is seeing everything as Krishna.
Well, I gave the answer. It's as Krishna. It means it's his. It's his. To see everything as Krishna means it's his. Yes. So, here's a wall. Our philosophy, correctly applied, doesn't mean the wall is Krishna in an absolute sense. It means it's Krishna's. I see Krishna there. Because it's Krishna's. Yes.
Form of absolute truth,
yeah,
and is invested with multifarious energies, and he's above the conception of manifested and unmanifested. So I'm trying to understand.
I thought somebody was going to ask that one.
Because we also hear that Brahma has a lifespan and 100 years lifespan. And
yeah.
That.
So but the answer comes from the previous verses, and the previous verses are stating. That his body is Shabda Brahman. And he gave up that body, but that the purport says it stayed with him even after he gave up that body. So he has a special, this is the oneness aspect. Although he has a body that has a beginning and end, he is a specially empowered entity. In that sense, beyond the unmanifest and manifest. Not his body, but him.
And the next verse says that he gave up this body, which has been glorified here, to accept another body.
Yeah.
It's not.
But the previous purport says that non-difference aspect stayed with him. Go back and look at it. It's subtle.
So the difference between the two bodies
is functional.
Is functional.
He had service to do. You have to have an appropriate body to do the service. Now we can't do like that, but he can. Yeah.
I remember reading a commentary by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur.
Speak slowly.
I remember reading the commentary by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur on these verses.
Yeah.
And he says that when it said he left his body, he gave up his body, actually he gave up his disposition, not the body.
Okay, I'll have to go look at the text.
And then also, in 28th verse, it was said that this incident of his interaction with his daughter was from some previous kalpa, not this kalpa. Because he says in this kalpa, he speaks four verses of Bhagavatam, and so he couldn't have done this behavior. That's what it said there. And I have one more question, Maharaj, if I can ask. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his book which you were mentioning yesterday about the Bhagavatam which he wrote.
Yes.
I remember reading the parts of that in that book in the beginning.
In the essay.
He accepts the position of evolution and he says this Bhagavatam is the crux or the pinnacle of that evolution. This knowledge is the crux of that evolution. That's how he, if I can remember correctly, presents it. And I was thinking that in one of his books, he's giving both deficits in the other upper sampradayas, which are also speculations. But in case of Western speculation, he's ready to accept their speculations so that he can share something much more deeper.
Well, it's a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not denigrating their position, he's elevating their position. And Prabhupada, on a number of occasions, said Darwin was right. It's in Padma Purana. He just didn't give credit to where the source came from. Padma Purana says, and he recites the verse of, you know, the different species and from the aquatics, da 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 da. So it's there in the Vedas. He doesn't give credit to the Vedas, but he doesn't give him credit for chemical evolution, but evolution of species, because lower consciousness. And, you know, and that another part of Darwin's picture of evolution is, in the beginning, all there was water.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the water came aquatics.
Mm-hmm.
And from aquatics came plants.
Mm-hmm.
So our picture is evolution of consciousness, not evolution of... And with evolution of consciousness, the soul may move. But, you know, he didn't have a soul in that picture. It's just evolution of forms by evolutionary process. So he borrowed and got it wrong. So it's credit and discredit. Mainly discredit. And, you know, similar with Bhaktivedanta. Going back to another piece mentioned yesterday evening, classic literature, Western classic literature, is just a retelling in modern context of scriptural teachings. Classic literature is that. Now, Harry Potter is something else, but classic literature. And now, so this is the pinnacle of that. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Jai.